The European Patent Office podcasts bring you an insight into the technology and innovation shaping the world.
Hello and welcome to this podcast from the European Patent Office. The current COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on the economy shows the potential and the importance of additive manufacturing technologies, more commonly known as 3D printing. Urgent needs for medical and specialized products, especially personal protective equipment such as masks, and an increasingly disrupted global supply chain require an easy, low-cost, rapid, and local fabrication method. Additive manufacturing can help overcome these shortcomings of conventional manufacturing techniques. Developing and selling innovative 3D printing machines and materials is the core business focus of the Austrian startup company Cubicure, our guests today. So Cubicure is one of the successful spin-outs from the Austrian Technical University of Vienna and a brilliant example of how combining the university's IP strategy with long-term technology transfer paved the way for a win-win collaboration between university and industry. And that's not all. It also facilitated the creation of a young and thriving company with international outreach. I can hardly wait to hear more. Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie Weber. I'm a member of the European Intellectual Property Help Desk, and we've teamed up with the EPO to bring you a new series of case studies centered around successful technology transfer. And the case of Cubicure is part of it. Only few people can do the split between a successful academic career and success as an entrepreneur. One of these remarkable persons is Jürgen Stumpfel, who's professor of material science and additive manufacturing at TU Vienna and the co-founder of Cubicure. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Jürgen.
Yeah, hello, Stephanie. Thanks for having me here today.
A very warm welcome. And also joining us is Karin Hofmann, who is patent and license manager at TU Vienna and one of the masterminds behind the university's technology transfer strategy that led to the creation of Cubicure. Welcome, Karin.
Hello, Stephanie. Hi, Jürgen. It's great to be here today.
All right. So to get us started, Jürgen, could you explain what is 3D printing technology actually, and what are the advantages in particular, comparing it to conventional manufacturing techniques?
Yeah, 3D printing or additive manufacturing is around for 30 years now. And the main benefit is that we can print very complex shaped parts. So it gives you a lot of design freedom. And the technology is now used very widely in biomedical engineering, but also in automotive engineering and aerospace engineering.
Mm-hmm. And what is your particular research focus in this rather broad field that actually also led to the creation in the end of Cubicure?
My specialty is lithography-based additive manufacturing, meaning that we use light to cure photopolymers. And the benefit of using light in this context is that we can fabricate parts with very high resolution. We are only limited by the wavelengths of the light, meaning that we can print parts with very delicate parts where very high precision is required. And this challenge is accompanied by issues with material science. And our specialty is to develop materials which are specially suited for lithography-based additive manufacturing.
Karin, as we've just heard from Jürgen, additive manufacturing research has been around for quite a while and started at the TU Vienna actually already in the 1990s. However, it was through a partnership with the industry partner Evoclar at the beginning of this century, actually, that the first results with commercial potential were reported to you. What was TU Vienna's tech transfer and patenting strategies actually to support such extensive commercial exploitation? Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that.
When we start to work with the researchers and when we have already an interested industry partner, our main aim is, of course, in the contract to set the rules of the game. And therefore, we, on one hand, find out the position and the interests of the researchers, because we have to represent the interests of the university and the researchers. But on the other hand, we also try to find out and understand the other party's needs. And it's we want to give the industrial partner the rights they need and retain all other rights for the university all other rights which are not essential for the partner's business strategy. And it's crucial for a university not to cut off the future developments and to be able to work together with other partners or, like in this case, to be able to establish spin-offs.
Jürgen, I mean, you are involved in another company as well. So Cubicure was your second spin-off after Litos, which is a company specialized in 3D printing of ceramics. So what did lead to the creation of Cubicure then?
Yeah, actually, this was somehow connected. Litos was started 5 years earlier, as you pointed out. And we got some investment there from a German family office. And when we discussed what we could do else, they encouraged us to do something in polymers. So Litos was focusing on ceramics. But these people from Germany, they encouraged us to also look into polymers in more detail. And that was actually then the starting point to start a second company. We had a lot of experience in polymers on an academic level. So there was a really big chunk of know-how floating around at the university. And putting that into an industrial setting, that was something very appealing to us, and especially to some of our students. So that's something I have to point out, that building such a company, I by myself wouldn't be able to do that, to be honest. So I was always very happy that we had some very ambitious students on board with good management skills and with a better economic background, actually, than I have myself. And starting something together with them, this was something very appealing for me and for the whole team. And that's how Cubicure got started about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, you just mentioned that. So the qualities as an entrepreneur, but still, I mean, you are a co-founder, so you have to balance and wear both hats, let's say. What's your experience? What do you find the most challenging? And also, on the contrary, the most rewarding, perhaps, in having both of these roles?
Yeah, so as you point out, there are challenges and rewards along the way. That's completely correct. I think the challenge is somehow to switch over from this more inventive approach, also inventing new things, innovating things. That's certainly something that has to be done at the university largely, trying out completely new things. And then switching that over to an industrial setting, there you definitely need some different skills there. So that's, I would say, the main challenge. So you have lots of each universities floating in innovation and people with lots of creativity. So there's plenty of potential there. And putting that into a business, then you need to somehow step back as an inventor or innovator. And you need to admit that managing such a company, as raising money, doing all these bureaucratic things, safety measures, hiring new people. So that's not definitely not easy. And that's the more important thing. So in the beginning, it's the innovation. Later on, it's the execution and the operation. And the inventors have to step back a little bit. And I think this is the main challenge, that the inventors are willing to admit that in the next phase, other people are very important. But this is definitely necessary. And the reward is, as in the long run, hopefully it's a financial reward. As I would say, starting a company just out of fun, also there should be some financial reward in the long run. That's one reward, but also that we see that our ideas are now used on a worldwide level, more or less, also, especially with Cubicure. We have an export rate of more than 90%, and also Litos, they are somewhere between 95% and 90% of export every year. So this technology which has been created here in Vienna is now really used worldwide. And I think this is one of the biggest rewards you can get in this field.
Yeah, I think it's really turning into a hotspot for 3D printing. And maybe you just mentioned the challenges also from transitioning perhaps between, you know, the academic field and then the entrepreneurial field. But I do believe and understand with the Technology Transfer Office, you have a very strong partner, Desai. So maybe Karin, to sort of bring you in again, I do understand, of course, you have these huge IP management capabilities, but I think the role and also, you know, the the services that you offer to researchers go beyond that, actually. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the role also of the TTO in sort of helping, you know, get started with now several spin-offs, not only Cubicure. I think this is a great success story. And maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the strategy and what you think are, you know, key ingredients in actually making a successful technology transfer and making that work for everyone.
Yeah, you're right. There are many, many things which have to come together to have such a success as we have in this case. Our role is on one hand to also foster a climate at the university and support the researchers in different ways, not only when they are coming with an actual invention. Already before, we have some activities, for example, in patent information, we have teaching activities to give master and PhD students some capabilities. And that's also then later on an asset for the spin-offs, because a lot of the PhD students later on, they start to work also in the spin-offs and need the patent information searching skills there. So there is lots of things we do in this area, and that's also important later on for successful technology transfer. You need this climate, which, as you have mentioned before, which also allows the researchers to invest time in exploitation activities. The contractual basis, when you have a research cooperation with industry, is also very, very important. The contract sets incentives for the researchers. It's ideal if they have a little bit of research freedom to develop new ideas. And a long-term perspective helps very much to bring in people. I think, Jürgen, that's you will agree on this. It's not easy to find students. And it's if you have a long-term perspective, it's much easier to involve PhD students and to get really good people involved in projects. And interdisciplinarity is also one of the things I want to mention.
And maybe to come back to this particular cooperation between the university of Evoclar and then Cubicure, Jürgen, how do you experience that cooperation? And since we're talking, you know, about patents and IP here as well, how would you describe the role of that? Was that supportive or at some times really a point you struggled with? Maybe you could share some insights into this collaboration and the role of IP in that one as well.
The IP is definitely a key point in the cooperation on one side, as that's what where we really need the people in Karin's department as negotiating with these large enterprises on a professional level with regard to intellectual property topics. That's a difficult thing and needs a lot of experience, and that's why we are really happy to have professional support from our IP department here. And this is relevant for negotiating the contracts at the university. And there our goal is always not to give away everything, but instead keeping some IP or parts of the IP at the university, for example, by granting exclusivity to the industrial partner in his specific field, let's say in biomedical engineering, and the university should keep the remaining fields for own use, meaning that the university can later on grant licenses to spin-offs or to graduates if a PhD student afterwards wants to start a company that he or she can get a license as a starting package, more or less, from the university. It's not for free, so they have to pay for that. But anyway, they have then something in their hands. And that this is very important in our case, it was at least, that these spin-offs more or less can start with a small package of intellectual property, meaning they have licenses of granted patents. And this is in the beginning very relevant for the initial valuation of the company. So if the company has some IP and has some background in the field and obviously talented people, this is very helpful for the initial valuation of the startup, meaning that it's easier to get money and also to get money without giving away the whole company from to start with.
May I add something? Because you've mentioned this situation of negotiation, and I think it's very helpful to have this role split, that on one hand you have the technology transfer positions who really concentrate on the contract, and the researchers can keep a little bit aside and they have their working relationship. And this is not really as entangled then with the negotiation part. So I think that's really a benefit.
Yeah, and I also have to feel, I mean, it's a very long-standing collaboration you have with Evoclar now, and we've been very much talking about commercialization, but I could imagine that this also, you know, affects the research. I mean, it's all started with a sort of collaboration in the frame of an R&D project. So maybe looking at that, how do you see, Jürgen, this sort of the benefits of such an industry university partnership? Of course, clearly with regard to commercialization, but I could imagine it also gives a new perspective to your research work as such.
Yeah, that's also, again, coming with challenges and rewards, like always. The challenge certainly is that industry, they want something from that, right? So they don't just pay us to be nice to us. They want to get something from that. And this always means that we cannot publish everything. So we have to step back a little bit in terms of publishing. On the other hand, many of those companies, they have really a very deep knowledge in their specific field. So that's the challenge at the university, right? There's this three-year cycle of PhD students, let's say, or four-year cycle. So meaning people learn a lot, and after 4 years they leave, and then we start all over again, right? We lose a lot of knowledge with every cycle. That's the purpose of the whole game. For me, for example, this is then difficult. The new people are coming in, and we start from scratch. In terms of an industrial collaboration, the level is then much higher, because there we cooperate with people who work in the field for 15, not maybe 20 years. So actually, the level of professionality, I would say, rather goes up if you have quite a lot of those industrial corporations. On the other hand, clearly, as mentioned, you have to give away something. Also, we cannot publish everything. We have to always be a little bit careful there. So this is then the drawback of the whole game. But overall, I would say in our case, at least I can claim these industrial corporations, they helped a lot to become much more professional in our field.
And I could imagine, because you mentioned this sort of, you know, young generation of students who really sort of enjoy or have this more entrepreneurial mindset, perhaps, and to also, you know, get students or attract students through this kind of collaboration, I could imagine that this is an asset as well. And probably then, Karin, also, as you mentioned, training and IP awareness plays a role. Is that something that you sort of do for students and staff already? So in terms of IP awareness raising?
Yeah, that's very important. And because of the startups, we can keep in contact. There is kind of an ecosystem created that we still are in contact with some of the graduates through to as they are employed in the startups then. And so they are still in the area, because the startups make research projects together with the university again. And so they are not completely left the sphere. So that's a little bit of the know-how is gathering around.
Thanks so much, Chitu. I'm afraid time's been flying and we've coming already to an end. So just to briefly some of the most important points. So what I find striking here is that we really have a long-term, you know, university-industry collaboration, and you both sort of underlined that. And I think it takes time, but it also takes trust to actually build that. And as you mentioned, IP can play a central role in sort of setting a frame and making sure that, you know, both parties are able to sort of satisfy their interests and get sort of this win-win situation where both parties benefit, or free in case of a spin-off coming along as well. And I think I also mentioned, or you also said, that the TTO plays an essential role also in sort of creating this ecosystem and innovation landscape to help foster that. But you also need, as Jürgen mentioned, and is an example himself, a researcher who's sort of open-minded and willing to actually sort of do the split. Karin, Jürgen, we've heard a lot from your end already, but Is there anything else you would like to add? What are key takeaways you would like to share with the community if it comes to this university industry collaborations and also with regard to the role of IP or patents, perhaps? Jürgen, what's your advice?
In my experience, these industry collaborations were always very rewarding, and I can just encourage everyone to look into that at the university level, even if you have to sacrifice some academic rewards. But saving IP at the very early stage, so that's where these industry collaborations help. They encourage us to protect our IP. And this IP, in our case, was really very helpful for starting a number of spin-offs now. So Litos and Cubico, we are not the only ones. So I can just everyone encourage to follow such a route if people are really interested in putting their academic work on a more industrial level. So that's something I can wholeheartedly recommend to look into. So combining IP with academic experience to move towards the next step.
To sum it up, on one hand, try to cover in the contract, when you have an industry collaboration contract, as much as possible right in the beginning. We agreed in this case even on the set of countries for patent protection. And on the other hand, but stay flexible and keep an eye on maybe changing needs of the partners to later on in collaboration to keep it alive and to keep the overall spirit alive. So to be flexible on the other hand as well.
Keep the spirit alive. I like that very much. That's excellent. Thank you very much, Karin and Jürgen, for this very interesting conversation, sharing your experience and insights. And it's with these recommendations that this podcast comes to an end. If you would like to know more about Cubicure's and Litos' fascinating technology transfer stories, or indeed any of our other case studies, then please visit epo.org/case studies. And if you've enjoyed this podcast about this aspiring company at the sharp end of technology transfer, then check out more EPO podcasts based on the other case studies. But for today, thanks for listening. We hope you'll be back soon for another Talk Innovation podcast. Goodbye.
Subscribe to the European Patent Office's podcast channel, Talk Innovation, at epo.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Let's talk innovation.